Welcome to the Midlife Masculine Podcast. I'm Dhruv Sethi. As men, we reach an inflection point in our lives where we question our achievements. Despite societal expectations and our own credentials, many of us feel unfulfilled. I have lived in three countries, built a career in finance, achieved several academic and professional qualifications, but I know there's still more to life, just like most men today. Join me as I invite guests to share wisdom so that we men become self-sovereign in mind, body, and spirit, all with a spiritual undertone. Welcome to another episode of the Midlife Masculine Podcast. My guest today is Eric McHugh. Eric is a serial entrepreneur, aged only 30. He's a president of ShopX Web3 e-commerce and co-founder and chief growth officer of dating and AI-powered matchmaking. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Dhruv. Really excited to be here, man.
Yeah, great to have you. I think you're going to teach me and my listeners a lot. So we're going to talk about Web3, crypto, AI-powered matchmaking. Quite excited about that. And the need for decentralization. So welcome, Eric. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's beautiful. It's sunny. Everything's working out, so I'm truly blessed. What about you?
Yeah, same here. Happy to be alive, and another day to be grateful for, of course.
Yeah, dude. You know what they say: gratitude is the attitude. And I guess we'll kick things off with. Sorry, I didn't mean to take over the intro, but it's impossible to be sad, mad, or just like in a negative mindset if you're thankful. So gratitude really just does play dividends.
100%. And of course, when you're in the midst of life, sometimes you're stressed or people can tick you off, but it's always important to remember to remain in that mindset of gratitude. And sometimes you have to peg yourself back. So you're right. Yeah, that gratitude is the attitude. So Eric, you say that you have an IQ of 140. That's actually my first question. So do you find that you view things differently to us normal mortals?
Just kind of want to touch that quickly. I view everyone as equal to everyone. So you're my equal, all of the listeners who are listening, we're all equal. We have different gifts in different ways. And I also view IQ as kind of a stupid metric in the sense it's a number. Who cares about it? The reason that came out is because at a past VC, they kind of care about that stuff. So every one of their startups took a test and I did well. So I view things exactly the same as you, just like a normal person.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, you're right. It is, I'm not really sure how they measure it, but a lot of people have said it is just a metric. And I mean, you can pay heed to it if you want. I think the average in the UK is 99, in the US is 97. But I mean, wherever I travel in the world, I see people as equals.
I would say EQ is probably more, the EQ is emotional equivalent of IQ. I would say that's probably more important. And I honestly think discipline and character top both those. So if you have discipline and character, I think you'll do well in life.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. Okay, so we have a lot to cover today, but I do want to start with Web3. So what is Web3 and why is it important? Why should midlife men think about it or care about it?
Cool. Let me set the frame for this question. And to answer it, I'll probably just go over quickly what Web1 is, Web2 is, and Web3 is. So imagine this, you're a midlife man like me, you or any of your listeners. Do you enjoy having your wealth stolen from you every second of every day by a group of powers that use it to either bomb people or enrich their friends? I don't think so. So I view Web3 and crypto as a solution. So to simplify it as much as possible, I view Web1, Web2, and Web3 are really just names when it comes down to it. I like the name Web1, Web2, Web3 because it makes logical sense for Web2 to come after or Web3 to come after Web2. So think of Web1 as a read-only, meaning in Web1, either of us could go on the internet and we could read content. Web2, think of social media, think of like Instagram, think of YouTube, think of this podcast, think of just any platform right now. So in Web2, you could read and you can write. So in Web2, Dhruv can, this is what we're doing right now. He's technically writing content, meaning he's the creator of the content. And then you as a listener, you're reading or whatever, you're listening. So you are consuming his content. So anyone in Web2 could create the content and anyone in Web2 could read content. Web3 is a difference maker in the sense you can read, write, and you can, so Web2 is important. So in Instagram and Facebook, they have all the power. So in Web2, they could cancel you at any point in time. It's like, okay, I don't like this guy. So they could cancel you for any particular reason, how they see fit. And this is important because let's say 20 years down the line, someone tweets something that's acceptable now, but not acceptable in the future. Like, they could find that and cancel you for that reason. on top of that, they do monopolize all your data and sell that and make a huge profit. So in Web3, I think it's the next logical step of the internet, meaning you can read, write, and you can own the content. So meaning we can read content, we can write content, but we can also create our own the content. Meaning if Drew were to create like an NFT or something like that, you as the listeners buy to support the channel, no one can cancel that NFT because it's a direct connection between you and Drew. So meaning you own Drew's NFT, he can give you value. He can continuously give you value through the connection of the NFT, meaning if he has like merchandise, you can get early access, free merchandise, exclusive content, really just what he as a creator programs in. And you as the listener who's bought the NFT, you get value from that NFT. So it creates a bilateral stream of value between the creator and the consumer, meaning value is free flowing. There's like no middleman just kind of sucking out all the value they possibly can.
So just for my listeners, when you say NFT, that is non-fungible token. So broadly speaking, could we call it digital art, like a JPEG or something like that?
Yeah, so just think of NFT as a digital collectible. It's a one-of-one collection on the internet. So the NFT would be, think of the Mona Lisa, how there's one Mona Lisa and there's plenty of copies. With NFTs, there'll be one NFT and there can't be a copy of that NFT. It's just the digital version of that. So it represents digital scarcity.
The regular guy listening to this podcast, how can he use this to his advantage and what does it protect him from, as in using Web3?
So right now, there's still Web3 is at a phase where it's still growing, meaning for Web3 to be successful, there has to be a lot of kinks worked out, meaning it has to be usable. There has to be mass incentive for people to use it. So Web3, one of my companies, ShopX, we're the bridge for e-commerce brands to enter the space with their customers. So hypothetically, if an e-commerce brand were to use ShopX, you like the brand, you can buy the NFT, then you get e-commerce benefits with that NFT. So we're working with some major clients like Fox Studios, their new show, Kapopolis. If you're a fan of Rick and Morty, you're a fan of the Kapopolis show, you could buy NFT Crab Chicken, and then you get benefits with that Crab Chicken. Like, for example, your Crab Chicken may show up in the show, you get exclusive access to content, you get some merchandise. So if you like a brand and they're in Web3, you can purchase NFT and get whatever benefits they have with that NFT.
Okay, so that benefits, or say, for lack of better words, kickbacks would come directly to the person who created that digital art or NFT.
Correct. So the creator of the NFT, they would get the, you as a customer, you would purchase it, and they have complete control over where the funds go. So the creator of the NFT sees all the reward.
So when we talk about Web3, it sounds like it's not just a question of technology. It's also a question of the legal side of things because we're talking about ownership of data.
Correct. So I'm definitely no legal expert, nor do I claim to be. And I have to throw in this disclaimer that nothing I say is financial or legal advice. But yes, there is a whole legal aspect of Web3. And I view Web3 as a crypto-based internet. And a lot of our laws for both finance, crypto, and just everything aren't adjusted for the present system, the incoming system. So there has to be a lot of work on the legal end. And luckily, there are some fantastic, I think some of the top legal minds in the world are actually working in Web3 on fixing that. So I'm going to shout out two people specifically. Mark Boyron, he's right now, I think, the CEO of Polygon. And he's close friends with ShopX. So our CEO, Cyrus, he's friends, like they're friends. So I want to shout him out, as well as Cal Evans. So they're doing some great work. And there's plenty of other great minds working on just updating the system.
So big tech like Google, Facebook, and all house all this personal data. Would they be happy or unhappy to see Web3 flourish and develop?
So that's an interesting question. I think it's, at first you'd seem like they'd be unhappy because obviously a huge source of profit goes away. But I think they view it as neutral because imagine you're Google and you're Facebook. You have the capital, you have both the mind and financial capital to build along with the system. So obviously, I don't think Google or Facebook are going to die or anything. I think they'll deploy resources and still kind of keep position if they do it smartly. And they've been thinking about it for years too. Like Facebook renamed its name to Meta, for crying out loud. So it's not like they're unaware of what's going on.
Okay, and you touched upon crypto. So what is the link between Web3 being this new version of the web and cryptocurrencies?
So cryptocurrencies, I think I view Web3 as a internet-based long cryptocurrencies, where cryptocurrencies, I mean, there's thousands of them, but the main ones are Bitcoin and Ethereum. So a lot of the web will be based on the back of Bitcoin and Ethereum. And for Web3 to be successful, we'll all be using it and no one will really know that they're using it. Like, for example, when you go to a bank, you withdraw money, you don't know what's going on in the background. When you're using your internet right now, using like TCP or something like that, just you don't know what's going on, you just kind of use it. So that's what's going to happen in the future for Web3.
Wouldn't Bitcoin be the safest crypto to be based on because there's an account for every transaction in the background, whereas the other altcoins or the other like Ethereum and the other altcoins, is still a bit murky and you still don't know what's happening at the board level.
Yeah, so Bitcoin, and again, not financial advice, but I view Bitcoin as the safest. I view Bitcoin as the king of the cryptocurrency. Without Bitcoin, the whole space wouldn't be here. So Bitcoin is king, in my opinion. But Bitcoin and Ethereum are different, meaning think of Bitcoin like a lion. Think of Ethereum like a shark. If you put the shark in, obviously on like the lion will win. But if you put the lion in the water, the shark will win. So they're different in the sense like Ethereum is more programmable. Part of Bitcoin security, and I do view Bitcoin as the most secure cryptocurrency, is it makes it harder to develop on. It just moves much slower. Transactions are clunky. Whereas Ethereum moves much faster. Now there's more iteration, more like Ethereum, not clones, but there are different currencies like Ethereum that move faster than Ethereum. So it's really about what you value. So I view Bitcoin as digital gold, and I view Ethereum as more the layer for Web3. But I could be wrong. I mean, Bitcoin could come up with a solution and become the faster one, and that's when all the devs adapt. So that's the beautiful thing about Web3, is it's both a composable and anti-fragile space. Composable means it's the compound interest of software, meaning everything we all build off each other in Web3, meaning someone solves a problem in Web3, another company uses their solution to make their solution, thus increasing the strength of the system. And anti-fragile essentially means whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So every bug that we find in Web2 or in Bitcoin and Ethereum, we fix it and the system becomes stronger based off of that. So yeah, I view Bitcoin as digital gold, and I think they're both here. They're both going to be around to stay for a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't claim to be a cryptocurrency expert, but from what I read, I've researched, Bitcoin is still the Mac daddy. And you mentioned Ethereum. When I was new to crypto, I used to think, yeah, Ethereum is the next greatest thing, all of that stuff. But then I saw the founder hanging out in World Economic Forum with the founder, Klaus Schwab, and all of a sudden, I just lost all that respect for Ethereum and no longer trust it. But that's just me.
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes Klaus Schwab, but that man is I don't think he's a positive influence on the world at all. Neither I do think the World Economic Forum is. But I do think it's important to note, and I started my crypto career as a Bitcoin maximalist for reasons like that, too. I'm saying, you know, Vitalik's the Klaus Schwab. But I think Ethereum's been around for long enough where it is decentralized enough where Vitalik doesn't have all the control type of thing. But again, no one likes to see Klaus Schwab anywhere.
Yeah, I remember when I first got into crypto, must have been like 5 years ago or something. You start off dipping into all types of cryptocurrencies. And at some point, I thought that my head was going to explode. Then I made an executive decision that, okay, I'm out of everything except Bitcoin. And I'm just going to focus my attention there. And since then, I would say largely my life has been a lot simpler, with the occasional volatility, of course. But overall, I'm so happy that I'm just focusing on one.
I think that happens pretty much to everyone. Everyone starts off, they hear about Bitcoin, they think it's cool. Like, oh, Bitcoin's cool. Then they hear about Ethereum, then they start buying Ethereum because then Ethereum's cool. And then once you hear about Ethereum, you hear about the altcoins, you're like, oh, altcoins are cool too. So you start buying altcoins, then you get wrecked, then you research more, then you're just like, I'm just sticking to Bitcoin.
Whilst we're on the topic of crypto, do you have any Bitcoin predictions in terms of price?
Honestly, dude, I don't like giving Bitcoin price predictions just because no one knows what's going to happen in the future, but it does tend to follow the same schedule every 4 years, and it's all based around the halving. So hopefully 2024 is a good year for Bitcoin. So there's a bunch of things that could contribute to that. A, it's a halving. So for your listeners who don't know, Bitcoin has a set amount of new Bitcoins created every single day, and that's unchangeable. That's programmed in the code. So every 4 years, the amount of Bitcoins per day gets cut in half. So thus drastically shocking the supply, which generally leads to an increase in price and attention. So that's happening. The US election's happening. So that a bunch of things could play into Bitcoin, but we've already had El Salvador adopt it. The new president of Argentina, he's really big into Bitcoin. So I think it's a game theory play as of now. And I think Bitcoin will eventually come out on top.
Yeah, very excited to see what happens in Argentina as well with the new president over there.
He's an interesting dude.
Very interesting. It's like the Argentinian version of Donald Trump. You know, you're going to watch a lot more news.
Yeah, no, for listeners, check out the new president of Argentina. If you like Trump, you'll find this guy. At the very least, he's entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, and so now, of course, we talked about Web3, we talked about Bitcoin. The general theme of those two topics is decentralization. So in your opinion, why is decentralization important to society and people in general?
Yeah, so let me answer that question with another question. How's the U.S. government doing?
Not good, and neither are any other governments in the world.
Exactly. So that's a problem with centralization. So what they are, they're a centralized entity. I mean, they have the power. So right now, the U.S. Federal Reserve can print money at will, thus devaluing everyone's dollar. So the U.S. government has control of the Fed, secondly, a private reserve, but the U.S. government has control of the Fed. So whenever they print money, the Federal Reserve, or whenever the Federal Reserve prints money, they're technically stealing from everyone on Earth to give to the corrupt people in the U.S. government who share with their friends, and they use that to kind of bomb everyone. So that's the issue, and that's the issue of centralization. The reason decentralization is important is, in our example, the U.S. government, once one person gets in, they're corrupt. They get in the corrupt friend, and now there's two people that are corrupt, and those two work together to get in a third person that's corrupt. So even if a good person is running, it's much more difficult to run against. They kind of get X'd out. So now it's like a pay-to-play club type of thing, where now we're left with a bunch of corruption, and that just leads to more and more corruption. Plus, in our centralized system, government system, it's the people making the rules really don't know what they're doing. And I'll use my good friend as an example. So he's an entrepreneur in the sense he creates meat. Like if you have Japanese sausages, pork products, you've probably had his products. And so he always talks about whenever the government makes a new rule regarding the farm, like they'll say, okay, you need to do this change by this date. And the farmer's like, first off, this doesn't do anything. It actually makes it worse for the animals. And then they have to uplift everything. They have to get new cages. They have to build new facilities just to appease the government. And if you look at the people making the rules, I guarantee you they've had zero experience creating any sort of farm or food product.
100% agree. These politicians are so out of touch. And I wonder, you know, every time we have an election in any country, US, UK, Sweden, we have these politicians always campaigning about how they're going to make things easier for business. But none of these politicians have ever run a business, managed a business, started a company, and they're going to change policies. So I'm like, who are these guys to be running the lives of everyone else? They're so out of touch.
Yeah, they are out of touch. None of them, most of them are career politicians, meaning they haven't done anything productive for society. That's the issue of centralized systems. So that's why I think Bitcoin is so important. So right now in our Web2 system, the easiest way to get a bunch of money without being rich is to become a politician. So look at the US Congress. Look at Nancy Pelosi. Look at all of them. Like Nancy Pelosi with like $50 million on her salary. How do you make that much money in the current system based on the Fed? You enter politics, you do slimy things, you take bribes, you do corruption, and then you get paid a bunch of money. So you're incentivized to be not productive in society, but with a Bitcoin standard, that doesn't work. How can you bribe? Because the reason that works for her is she's close to the printer of money, meaning she has more access to the printer of money, thus she just gives it to herself and her friends. With a decentralized system like Bitcoin, you can't really do that with Bitcoin because there's limited supply. It's all verifiable. It's all transactive. Like you can see where everything is going.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's so many aspects of society that we need to decentralize. We talked about Web3, but decision-making, you know, how we get our roads maintained and all of that stuff.
Or how we don't get them maintained.
Yeah, in some places we don't. Yeah, you're right.
That's funny. It's like you see a road, like they're going to replace a stop sign. Oh, that's going to be another $100,000.
Yeah, exactly. Where does all that money go? Seriously. Yeah, but if you could pick one thing, the heart of all of it, what would you say it is? Is it the money supply? Like if you fix that, the money supply with Bitcoin, say, do you think everything else pretty much will fall into place? Is that the heart of it?
I think the heart is the supply, the type of money we have. So right now we have fiat money, which is faith-based, meaning anyone could create it. So when we were on gold, it was much better because you couldn't just create gold. So I think the heart of the problems are that we're on a fiat-based system. And this was, of course, done by design. If you look at the creation of the Fed, I forget the book, but it was called like the Creature from Jekyll Island or something. They go into the details of the creation of the Fed. It's super suspect. And it was obviously done by design to enrich the rich and keep them in power and to keep them rich. Whereas I think Bitcoin topples all that and sets itself free.
Wasn't the Titanic deliberately sunk because those rich millionaires, billionaires who opposed the creation of the Federal Reserve were actually on the Titanic, and so they had to sink that, that being the JP Morgans and the others who wanted the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I heard a little rumor that the people from Chase were supposed to be out, and they backed out last minute. But of course, that's just a coincidence, conspiracy theory that may or may not be proven true in like 5 years. You know how the trend works with that, where it's like, yeah, you hear about it on Reddit like 5 years ago, that then the mainstream hears about it and then just don't believe it at that point.
Yeah, it's hard to get evidence. But since COVID, one thing I have learned is there are no such thing as conspiracy theories anymore because they all came true. Okay, so that's decentralization. Now, we have to talk about artificial intelligence, AI-powered matchmaking. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so that's another company we started. It's called Dating, dating.io. So what it is, it's an AI-powered matchmaker, meaning you'll be able to log onto your account, connect all your social media, and from your digital footprint, it'll match you with it'll match you with matches who are generally, who are likely to match with you on an authentic level. And this is different from current dating apps that just kind of match you based on likes. Like, okay, the hot people get all the people. Whereas in dating, like for example, I can match, like, okay, find me, they'll show my three matches. Like, okay, Ashley, Alyssa, Kimberly. Oh, I see Kimberly's half Filipino. I see she is listening to System of a Down on Spotify. Oh, she likes anime. Oh, her top anime list is One Piece. And that will give me that data. And then from there, I can get more granular. Okay, is she close to their family? Did she go to a four-year university? And the goal is to match people with authentic interests versus just kind of matching, just kind of throwing people in. It's called churn marketing. So churn marketing is, it's a marketing-based system where the company makes money by keeping people on the wheel. So think about like why Tinder and Hinge and all those aren't successful. It's because they make money when the users are actually just continuously going to the app. Dating solves this by matching people with authentic interests. And it's not just a dating app. It's more of a matchmaking service. So if your listeners are listening and you have some money, you may have an approach by matchmakers. Like I can set you up with someone for like $5,000. So we just democratize that. So everyone has access to that matchmaking. And so from the example, like Kimberly likes One Piece or whatever, it would connect us based on that. And then it could help us plan a date. It could be like, for example, oh, there's a One Piece showing in a week. Would you like me to ask Kimberly for you? And then it can help plan fun dates like that. And even post-match, it can just continuously, it can be like your AI personal matchmaking bubbler. If you check out the logo, it's based on Cortana from Halo. So that's just a cool Easter egg if you played Halo.
Okay. And in dating.io, this AI powered matchmaking service, so that has to source a lot of personal information, I presume, say from Spotify or whatever you've subscribed to, Amazon, and it sort of uses that to suggest good matches.
That's exactly right. So it'll just it creates a profile based on your digital footprint, so you don't have to create anything. And it's all information you've already given to Spotify and all those services. You just kind of give the AI access to that, and then it'll hopefully match you based on preferences. And the cool thing about dating AI is the more it's alive, the smarter it'll get, and the better it gets at matchmaking. So, for example, it could show you three matches for the day. You don't like any of them. The next day's matches will be better, and then better, and then better, and then eventually, hopefully, you find someone.
And I know AI is used a lot in images and all of that. So does it use the photos in any way, or is it purely like background data?
Could do the photos as well. So if you have a specific type, like for example, if you have like all your ex-boyfriends are specific, like hair color, it may show you that. It could ask you questions like, okay, show me your favorite celebrity. Like, who's your celebrity crush? And we'll incorporate fun ways so that you send a picture of whatever your celebrity crush, and then they could spit out matches that kind of resemble your celebrity crush. So yeah, it's supposed to be all encompassing, and it's building, so it's a work in progress, but it is getting pretty cool actually.
That sounds very interesting. I'm sure a lot of my listeners would be interested in that.
Yeah, so I think it's our pitch is, if you're having bad luck on the dating apps, which honestly everyone on the dating apps is, give this a try. It'll hopefully match you, and then you can get really granular search. Like I get the match, it's like, okay, how far is she? What's her age? Something I like to do is like, does she have a private Instagram? And then like me personally, like, okay, what's the ratio of photos to dudes tags? So you can do fun stuff like that. So it can play detective for you.
Wow, that's very interesting. It's amazing how technology has developed. So just a very curious question, and it's really a side note or side question from my side. So you have a patent for that, I presume?
Yeah, so we're building that. It's in process.
Oh, okay, fantastic. Wow, okay. And then you have ShopX as well. So you briefly touched upon it earlier on about it being a Web3 e-commerce site. So talk a little bit about ShopX.
Sure. So when you think of ShopX, I want you to think of the Google or Apple Web3. Long term, we're going to be a suite of products for a brand to download an app and then easily interact with Web3 benefits. We have two products live right now, and they tie together. The first is ReserveX. So that's a NFT-powered loyalty program. And if to simplify, just think of like a loyalty pass on the blockchain. You don't have to know it's blockchain-based. So if you're a Shopify or WooCommerce brand, and in terms of e-commerce stores, if you're running an e-commerce store, you need a platform to sell your products. Shopify and WooCommerce are two out of the big four for those of you who don't know. So if you're on either of those plans, you can download the ShopX app. It's just like downloading an iPhone app or an Android app. You go to the app store, it's like you search ShopX, you find ShopX, and then from directly within the app from your Shopify store, you can launch your own NFT collection with e-commerce benefits. Meaning you can launch an NFT collection with products programmed into the pass, meaning the customers who purchase the pass, they get access to specific products. So imagine like a Nike, like a company like Nike, they launch a gold tier collection, their super fans buy that gold tier collection pass. And now Nike as a company, to go back to example of like a value stream between the creator and the consumer, Nike knows they have those gold tier passes, so they can program in benefits to that pass, meaning they can drop them early access to products, discounts, and real lives as a pass holder. So that's the ReserveX NFT loyalty program. And so as a company, when you are launching the NFT loyalty program, you have control over it where 95% of the funds go. So if you're working like an influencer or an agency, you can just program them into the pass. So whenever a pass gets sold, they automatically get paid. You don't have to deal with anything like that. It just goes straight to the wallet because it's crypto. ShopX earns our money from the 5%. So we're a free app to download. So let's say Nike sells one pass for $100. They have 95% control of $95, or they have 100% control of $95. ShopX earns $5 on that transaction. And then we give half of that, so 2.5% of the total pass cost. We share that with our community. The logic behind that is it's better to give than receive. And this is our second product. This is SquadX. So just like Twitter or X now pays its creators in ad revenue, we pay our community for helping our ecosystem grow in ReserveX revenue. So if you're part of our SquadX community, as ShopX gets more and more brands on board, more and more brands get more and more mints, so they're happy, their customers are happy, everyone's happy, you get paid more and more Ethereum. As you get paid more and more Ethereum, you're happy, you're saying, oh, I'm getting paid, you're posting about this. This creates some positive energy around ShopX, creates some attention, thus creating more and more brands for ShopX, thus creating more and more payouts for you. So it's the two theories behind that is, I believe upward spirals exist, meaning you can either go in a downward spiral, which I'm sure you know plenty of people who went down downward spirals, but the same works for upward spiral, meaning things will just keep working out for you and keep getting better and better. So there's that. And the second concept is power versus force. So in a forceful system, let's say me and you are in a forceful relationship, one of us benefits, one of us doesn't benefit. So that's obviously that means it's unsustainable. Eventually the person who's not benefit, they'll be like, fuck this, I'm out, peace. But in a power relationship, we both benefit, meaning if we're in a relationship that's powerful, we're both benefiting from that relationship, therefore we're both going to stay in. So with the ShopX model, it's a B2B2C. It's a B2B2C company, meaning we sell to brands, but the brands have to sell to their customers. So in that example, ShopX, we benefit because obviously as a brand earns more mints, more passes, we earn more revenue. The brand benefits because ShopX is a free app to download, so it doesn't really cost any money. So they earn revenue from when customers mint the pass. So they get brand benefits like increased customer lifetime value, higher conversions, a bunch of stuff because of the loyalty aspect. The customer wins, so they benefit because they wanted to buy the pass. So as a pass holder, you're getting continuous benefits. So you get access to the brand in that sense. And from the ShopX community standpoint, we do love our community. So you benefit as well because as ShopX earns more and more brands, you get more and more ETH. So it's a system where no one loses. Everyone just benefits. So rather than fight over like a little piece of the pie, just increase the whole size of the pie. So ShopX signs the brand. And in our example, the creator is an e-commerce brand. So the brand will create the pass once. So they can create as many passes as they want and they can decide what benefits they have. Meaning if you wanted to, as a brand, you can create a gold silver style pass where you continuously add benefits to the product. Meaning like as a gold pass holder, you get early access to this product, early access to this product, and discount on this product, so you can get continuous benefits. Or it could be a one-off product, meaning you buy this pass, you get a redeem it for one product. So think of like an Apple, you want to buy the new iPhone, but it's just sold out. If you have the pass, you don't have to worry about it because it's reserved on the token gated site. So the way the technology works, so let's say one of our brands is the Mag Park. Let's say they're dropping a limited collection hat that only pass holders have access to. So you as a customer, if you go to the site and you try to purchase a hat, it'll say on the pop-up will come up and say, hey, you need this pass to purchase this hat. Click here to purchase this pass. Whereas if I have the pass, it automatically scans it. So it checks to see if you have the NFT. If you have the NFT, I can then proceed to the checkout of the brand's product. And this is important because any like retention emails that the brand has in place, like to keep the customer coming back, we don't mess with that. And whatever payment method the brand uses for customers to purchase the product, we don't mess with that either because we want to keep it as simple as possible for e-commerce brands.
Okay, I see. And it sounds, that was long-winded, but I just see the general principle of how the risk and reward and the incentive works in that. But just to confirm, so the way to earn in via ShopX is via Ethereum tokens. That's how you paid out. Is that correct?
So if you are part of the SquadX ShopX community, you get paid Ethereum. That is correct.
Okay. So it's on the Ethereum blockchain, ShopX. Okay. Fantastic. Eric, I've learned a lot from you. Thank you very much for breaking things down for people like me so that it was easier for me to understand.
Of course, man. Happy to do it.
So what's next for you?
I'm excited to see both companies succeed. I think dating will get to 1 billion users pretty quickly, just because if you do check out the YouTube demo, it's a slick app and it's fun to use. And in terms of ShopX, I think that it'll help speed Web3 mass adoption, which I'm looking forward to as well.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. And would you have any takeaways for my listeners in terms of decentralization and anything else?
Yeah, so decentralization is incredibly important to me. And for your listeners listening, decentralization is a double-edged sword, meaning you do get the power, you own your data, you own your money, no one can take it from you. But with that power comes responsibility. So you have to research on how to properly secure your crypto. So if you're into crypto or thinking about going to crypto, I recommend it. I think it's better for the future as all. But you are in control of your money, meaning it's within your responsibility to learn how to properly interact with the system and not lose it or get scammed.
Yeah, I do think taking control of our monetary system is the last frontier for humanity. With that, Eric, thank you once again. And where can people find you?
Yeah, so we'll drop the links in the episode description, but the best place to do it is to check out the ShopX site, shopx.co, or dating, dating.io. On social media, Instagram, Eric D. McHugh, Twitter, Eric McHugh Zero. So those are some good places.
Yeah, and I'll link that in the description below. Well, Eric, thank you once again. It was great having you on.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really enjoyed it. And I hope your listeners, I'm wishing all of them truly the best lives possible. So go get them.
If you liked this episode, then make sure to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review. That will help me get to people just like you. Also, make sure to visit mlmpod.info. Keep acquiring knowledge, and I'll see you in the next episode.